You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, thanks for hitting play. Welcome to The Come Up. My name is Matt, and on this episode, a conversation with Chris Davis, the star of the new movie Big George Foreman. Earlier this year, Chris was on Broadway in the all-black revival of Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman. Chris and I had not met before this, so it was fun to dive deep and get real about everything from what it's been like doing press for a big movie like this, his journey with faith and spirituality, and his passion for the work. I'm so grateful that Chris was willing to be so open and honest about everything that he's learned. And I think whether you know Chris or not, you'll find his joy infectious. I certainly did. So, without further ado, here is Chris Davis. Chris, how's press been? I know it's been a lot.
Yeah, press has been intense, man. You know, it's one of those things that I think elevates you because it makes you think about your work in a very interesting way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not somebody who particularly likes to talk about himself. I like to keep the work focused and specific.
Yeah.
You know, because I think that, you know, for me, that matters a lot, you know? So being able to articulate some of the things you've done, what you did during a job and how you feel about the job and the people involved and what you hope that people, you know, get to feel from the work that you did. It's been a very interesting and eye-opening experience in that way. And I just, yeah, I feel like it requires some growth and you change from it.
Right, because you're like, it's like forced reflection, basically.
Yeah.
That like you probably otherwise wouldn't have done.
Ever. You know, if I could have gotten away with not speaking about myself or really digging into, you know, oh, for sure, I would have kept quiet. I would have answered some questions here and there.
Uh-huh.
You know, been really formulaic about it. Oh, I think the movies. You know,
nope.
No, buddy. So because, you know, you're being asked questions for hours and hours and hours, and sometimes they're the same questions.
Right.
So then, sure, you can answer it this one way for a half an hour. So now you ask that question at minute 31, and you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah, it's
There's
different.
Something deeper there.
Yeah.
Something more interesting there, you know?
Yeah.
So it does that, and
have there been any particular revelations that have come up that have been that you would like remember that have been surprising, like in doing all this and answering questions? Have there been have new things been revealed to you?
I think what has been revealed to me is like the distance from when I first started, you know, because when I first started, we were still at that time putting hard copies in the boxes.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah, so I was putting hard copies in the boxes, you know, taking the mega bus up from Philadelphia.
Yep.
When, you know, when people didn't know about it, it was still wrong sitting on there, and you know, it wasn't crazy and mad. All the way up until this moment. And it feels like it's easy for that type of history to feel like a blink. And you can bypass a lot of what you've been through and how you got there and how you got to a point where you can do certain types of work.
Because
it's not going to happen overnight, right? So it made me really dig deep and find those moments in my life and in my journey that really got me here. And I felt bad sometimes because I didn't have the time to articulate them all.
Mm.
In each moment, you know, but it also made me come to terms with how much I have changed since then and having to accept that, you know, of course, if I want the growth to happen in my career, then there has to be some type of personal growth that happens and it's required. Sure. So I could do all this, right? And then go back into my little shell and go be where it's safe, or I can try to embrace it and move forward with it and grow from it. So I still feel like, I'm going to be honest, Matt, I feel like every single day I wake up during this process, I'm hitting a new revelation.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, my feet are on the ground. What is happening? This is real. You know, like, and not even like the grandness of it, but like the growth that's happening.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting. A couple things in there. I think, first of all, I think it's really useful at any stage in anyone's career to be doing that reflecting work. Because I think it's easy in the beginning or the start of whatever it is to feel like, oh, well, my career is not worth reflecting on, or like not taking the opportunity to sit and reflect on, oh, okay, what did this process teach me? What am I learning right now? Like, how am I different than when I started? I think those lessons can happen at any point in sort of the longevity of a career. But I definitely think, obviously, when a threshold is crossed, like the ones that you've been, you know, crossing this year and recently, there's certainly going to be more perspective. You're going to zoom out even farther. You're going to have the opportunity to do that. And again, like you said, you don't have to do that. Like, you could just go back into your shell and stay the same, but you have a really unique opportunity to like dig in and grow. And that was honestly one of the things I was so curious about, because obviously lots of physical transformation for the movie. I can only imagine the mental transformation that had to go on. That from my POV, it was like, first of all, did you think that you were capable of doing this?
You know, I actually didn't like going into a show, right? You get your script, you do the work, you do all the work that it takes to get ready for the show, right? We don't have a rehearsal process, so we don't got 4 to 6 to 8, whatever weeks it takes you to do, you know? So I'm like, okay, so there's a lot of work that has to go into it. So I did what one should do, which is study, get into the work, do the analysis, get into the character stuff. But there was one point during the training, and I didn't have a lot of time to train, and you know, I'm standing in the gym. I had like 17 fights to learn for this film at that time, right? Never boxed a day in my life, right? But the boxing training starts, and we're filming 6 weeks later, so now I got 17 fights to learn. Never fought a day in my life.
In 6 weeks.
And I got a fight like George Foreman.
Holy shit.
Come on, right? So there was, I'm standing in the gym after a long, long day, just me in there. I'm drinking some water and I'm looking around. My body hurts so bad, Matt. I can't tell you how bad my body hurt. And I was looking around and I was like, man, they might have the wrong guy. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this.
Yeah.
Because sure, everybody thinks that when you get the movie where you get in shape, you know, that you're going to be working out for 3 months and then you're going to get in shape for 3 months. That is not what happened. That is not what happened at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that. I'm like, I don't know if it's just me, if this is the standard, but people who are a little higher up get the time, but I don't know how people do this.
Yeah.
And a couple days later, Matt, the hurricane hits New Orleans, rips the roof off the production office, rains on all the paperwork, and we got to start over. So now we're backed up 3 to 4 months. So now I've got 3 to 4 months to continue my boxing training. Worked out, man.
God was looking out for you. I'm saying,
God was looking out.
Damn.
Yeah.
Damn. That'll bring you faith real quick. I mean, obviously real a terrible quick. Circumstance, but kind of unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, speaking to that, you know, the sort of like when you get the movie, and I think also, you know, you've done Broadway shows now and you've done a lot of television, and what was your expectation of what those things would be like versus what they actually were? Like, I'm always interested to hear about the contrast and the process of processing that contrast of like, what is my expectation? And then, oh, wait, the reality of this is not the same.
if I'm going to be honest, I went into it with no expectations. I mean, of course, there was the expectation that I was going to be treated with respect.
Absolutely. Right?
You have that expectation when you go into any job. But, you know, the thing about coming from theater is you know that the floor is never actually sturdy. You know, like it's never really sturdy. So I went into it without having many expectations at all, right? Without expecting that this was going to be an awesome gig that everyone was going to see and everyone was going to love my work and nothing will ever be a problem ever again in my life. Never had that expectation.
But it's easy to go there. I mean, it's very easy to go there.
Never had that expectation. Never had the expectation that I was going to have, you know, a lot of collaborative processes with the director. Never. So I put all of that energy into the work that I could do before we started. So for me, it was simply about the work. The only expectation I had was for myself to show up for myself. So I didn't go hang out. No one could meet me anywhere. No one saw me out doing crazy things. I worked. I would leave from the gym. We'd start at 4 a.m. or 3 a.m. some days. We'd be in there 5 to 6 hours. I'd leave the gym, go home, eat, go back to the gym. I would digest, go back to the gym for 2 hours. Get upstairs. Now I'm back in my script. Now I'm reading something and I'm watching footage. And that's the way it was through the entirety of the process. Because if I would have got caught up in the external things, you know what I mean? It would have become something else. And I never wanted it to feel like it was about me. Because once that happened, anything else that happened around this film that didn't go well was going to destroy me.
Right.
But the one thing that I could control was the amount of work that I put in. And that's something that no one could take away from me. And I wanted to say to myself, you know, Chris, win, lose, or draw, when you wake up and this film is done, you don't want to be having any ghosts screaming at you saying, I wish we would have just read a little bit longer. I wish we would have eaten more calories. Why didn't we go to the gym 2 more hours that day? X, Y, and Z. I didn't want that to happen to me at all because I know what it's like to finish a job wishing that you would have made a different choice.
And so you focus on what you can control.
Yes.
But that's powerful. And also, that's experience too. Because I think if you had gotten this job probably 5-10 years ago.
No way.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
I
see that happen all the time too. It happens in theater too, especially. I mean, like we said, like the floor's never that sturdy in theater. You really don't know. Mm-hmm. And there can be this sort of feeling like, oh my God, this could be the thing that X, Y, or Z. And then you close in rehearsal, you know, like that's happening. It happens.
It happens.
And, I think the focus on I had a similar experience where I was doing a job and it gave me the opportunity to like focus on not only the work but also like it consumed me. It was like my physical regime, my food. It was all of it. There's something really, at least for me, there's something really fun about that and really rewarding about really getting to go like all in and being like, oh no, this is the only thing I'm focusing on right now. Is like giving 100% of myself to this thing. And however it's received, whatever else happens outside of me is not on me anymore. Like all I can do is what I can do.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, in this industry, there's so many, we take it personal, right? And granted, we should feel something, right? But I think we take the wrong things personal. I think we take it personal by saying, I'm being rejected. I don't know about the I'm being rejected as much as that's their flavor.
Right.
Somebody else wants my flavor. You know, that's because, you know, you start to really understand how people come together and formulate and design shows around ideas. And it's okay that you don't fit into someone's idea.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with me. You know, I just didn't fit into that. And you know what? If I personally believe that there is something wrong with me, And what is that thing? Is it something? Is it something that I can change, right?
Right.
Is it in my control? And if so, am I going to do it or am I not?
Right. Like, was I prepared enough? You know what I mean? Like something like that.
What did I do 2 days ago that led to my failure in the audition today?
Right.
Right. It's not just last night. It's what happened on Monday.
Yeah.
That might be affecting your audition on Friday. And I got to be honest with myself and say that to myself. Like, no, man, I went to happy hour yesterday. Sure, I got home at 8:00. But I didn't look at my stuff at all. And then I was still drunk, you know? So then I wake up and then I'm hungover. And I got to fix myself in the morning. These things matter. It matters when you walk in and you think you should get yourself together, but your energy, your inner life.
I was
going
to say, it's energy.
Different.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you know, you're walking in with all of that stuff that you put into yourself the day before. And that's important. And I got to be honest with myself. And that's what it was for me. During my process and my journey, every single time that something didn't work out or I didn't land something, I was wondering, I went back to the tape. I played the tape back and went back to the board. And I said, okay, what did I do that didn't feel right in there?
Right.
How do I change that? And what did I do before? How can I change that? And it's always been a constant shift for me, you know, pivoting in whatever I believed was the proper way for me to audition or to perform.
Yeah.
And that has to continue to happen as we grow as artists. And that's been key for me in my life. So
that's
key.
Huge. And it's also like, it's not about changing your essence, right? It's like, it's not, there's nothing wrong with you. It's just, okay, you're right. Like the flavor wasn't quite right. And same thing we were talking about before is like, did I do everything I could do? Like, was I prepared? Did I show up generously and kindly and with love in that space? And then the rest of it, it's like,
if you did everything you possibly could do, hey man, go home, eat some chips, throw in a movie, and call it a day.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Because there are so many variables that go into choosing their person, their people, and it could be something as arbitrary as we know, as like, oh, this person shaved today. That person did not.
Stomach ache during your audition. You know what I mean? You just don't know.
You just don't know.
You just don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
but I think that's hard. I just think that's hard. It's especially as artists, we're feelers, right? We're like heart forward people. And so it's hard to not take those things personally and not think there's something wrong with me.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what I'm saying. Like, I know it's hard. That's what I'm saying. Like, I wouldn't tell someone not to, right?
Yeah.
Because it's hard.
Yeah.
And how do you not? But I think, you know, as time goes on, practicing some cognitive reframing is healthy because it's by not making it about you, then it has to be about something else. And if it's always about something else, it can never be about you. So therefore, for me, it just boiled down to my level of preparation.
Yep.
If that's what it boils down to, then I know that it's never about me. Because I actually, for this audition, did every possible thing I could do. And it's really, y'all making a different choice. And
it's all good.
Else,
yeah.
It's all good. I get it, you know? And sometimes we might be trying to bite off something bigger than we can handle. Like you said, 5 years ago, could I have handled this job? No. You know, 5 years ago, would I have wanted this job? Sure.
Right.
If I auditioned for this job and didn't get it, would I be a little sad? Sure. But knowing me 5 years ago, this is a steak I probably couldn't handle.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so,
right.
So like, sometimes
a little bit
it's
of faith
a bit
too.
Bigger.
Yeah, right.
So you got to keep that faith, you know, you got to keep riding with it, man. And those feelings are going to happen. We are going to feel them all day, all time.
Yeah.
You know, it don't stop. You're always going to feel like something might be wrong with you. But that's what I mean by the practice of cognitive reframing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always switching up my thought process on a thing. I mean, even with this, like I said before, I was there and I said, they might have the wrong guy.
Yeah.
They might have the wrong guy, right? Cognitive reframing. You know, if it wasn't for my boxing coach, you know, I don't know how I would have gotten through this process without that man. Because he, from the outside, was able to continue to speak positive things into my consciousness when things got hard and when things seemed impossible, you know, when it felt like I had reached my limit. He was able to like continue to push me. So it's never going to stop, right? And doing some of the like some of the relationships that you might have with people on the set or so, whatever, you might think, is there something wrong with me?
Yeah.
But it's not. There's nothing wrong. I'm doing everything I can. I'm giving as many hugs. I'm giving as much energy as I possibly could.
Right.
So how can something be wrong with me when I'm showing so much love?
Yeah.
And leading with that.
So let's flip this then. So on one end, right, it can feel like, how do I get here? So basically, like if you don't get the job, there's a tendency to, like you said, take it personally, right?
See.
I think one of the big antidotes to that, at least for me, has been like, not, I feel like confidence is not the right word, but it's like having enough self-belief in yourself that it's like, oh no, I'm whole enough. And if I have something to work on, I'll work on it, but I'm a whole person. I don't need anything to fill me or fill some void in myself. So in the context of working on something like this, but really everything you've done, working with people that you probably have a lot of deep respect for, Donald Glover, Forrest Whitaker, I mean, like it's a big list. Wendell Pierce, like these are really, really substantial figures.
Yeah.
How has that been in the sense of like showing up and having enough confidence in yourself to say, no, I deserve to be here with these people. You know what I mean? Like I imagine it can feel like, oh, wait a second. I'm not enough. And you have to show up with a certain amount of, like I said, self-belief in order to like meet them where they are.
Yeah. That imposter thing is real. And I would be lying if I were to say that didn't happen and that doesn't still happen, you know, because sometimes I go into spaces where I'm like, well, I don't know. And you know what? Sometimes those spaces are not right for you.
Right.
Then it's not necessarily an imposter thing as much as an energy thing. And being able to discern the difference is key, you know, because you're not going to get along with everybody you work with. You're not going to get along with everybody you admire. Right. But it doesn't take away the fact that they're really strong artists and you can admire their work.
Yes.
Right. So again, those moments happened, right? But I always make it about the work.
Right.
So like, sure, imposter as in, will they like me? Will they hate me?
Ego. That's all ego.
Ego, right?
Yeah, that's there all it is. Ego.
So that's that you feel if you didn't do your work.
Right.
And you embarrass yourself. You didn't do, but again, Chris, are you being honest with yourself? Did you show up or were you BSing, right? Be honest, Chris. So if I'm able to be honest with myself about that, then I can say, okay. And what I do say it, I don't give a damn who liked me. You don't gotta like me. I don't care anymore if you like me or if you do not like me. Are we telling the story? Is this story being told properly? I will respect you.
Yeah.
I will give you the utmost respect. You'll never hear a crazy thing come out of my mouth towards you. If I have food, I will feed you. If I have clothes, I will clothe you. You do not have to like me in the sense of we got to be buddies. And I don't got to try to extract that from you. Let's focus on the work. So we don't make it personal. And if we're able to successfully make the story the central focus in all of our purposes here at this moment, then I think we're all doing the right job. And I think that nobody's an imposter at that point. It ain't about me, it ain't about you, it ain't about you, it ain't about you.
It's about the work.
It's about the work. So I'm standing across from Forrest Whitaker. I'm not thinking about in the moment, does Forrest Whitaker like me?
Right.
Oh, snap, I don't belong here. No, I was at home digging into this script. I knew he was coming. So what? I knew he was in his way. I didn't walk in to work and then boom, there's Forrest Whitaker. No.
No, you knew. You're right. Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying? And I didn't sit at home and psych myself out by reading every article I could on Forrest Whitaker and watching all of his movies, X, yeah. Y, and Z. No, I focused on the task. This is who he's playing. This is who I'm playing. And if I'm focusing on work, then what that hopefully allows Mr. Whitaker to see is that I can keep up my end of the bargain, which allows him to then respect me because it's not.
But that's a byproduct.
Yeah.
The respect is the byproduct of the work.
Of the work.
I think that's well said. I think that's really well said. I think it's connected to, I like the idea of it making it about something bigger than yourself.
Yeah.
Right. It's not about, like, if you can remove ego from it, which it's going to be there, right? Like that's going to show up because we're human beings, but focusing on something that's larger than you or me, I think is just like a really good tool. And I find that to be the case sort of across the board in life too. Like even in relationships, it's like, oh no, can this be about the relationship? What are we working towards together? Let's not make this a personal thing.
Yeah. Sometimes you can't take it personal.
You know?
Yeah.
And to me, that feels connected to faith. It feels connected to spirituality and faith in the sense of, right? Focusing on something larger and removing the self and trusting that you're taken care of and that you're being held and carried in the places and spaces that you're supposed to be. I know you grew up going to church. Where are you at now with spirituality and faith?
I completely believe in, God, higher power. You know, my faith is stronger than ever.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't always that way during my career. I won't lie. You know, because somehow, being in the career gives you a sense of control without being in control, but you still feel like you're in control.
Huh.
You know, so you feel like you don't need, help here. You don't need help there. You don't need to get a coach anymore. You don't need to be it's all on you, grand power. I, myself, is different now. And ever since I stopped, subscribing to myself, things have changed tremendously. I don't think I could have done this job had I had that attitude.
Right.
You know, because I had to understand this story about Mr. Foreman is not my story. It's got nothing to do with me. It's about his legacy, and I have the privilege of continuing that legacy.
Mm.
Period. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whatever I'm feeling about what should happen in this scene, if the director gives me the opportunity to share my thoughts and he wants to listen, that is a privilege. You know, that's a privilege, but it's not about me.
Yeah.
So I would go to the director and I say, did we get it? Right? Not did we get what I was feeling. Whatever you saw, whatever you had on your storyboard, is that it?
Yeah.
No? Then let's go back. I want to get what that is. To being of service in that way, you know?
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. Being of service, too. I think that's spiritual, too. Serving something. Serving something greater.
Serving something, you know.
Being of use, you know.
Yes. Because the ego is a career killer. It's a spirit killer.
Definitely.
You know, and even if you have a massive career with a massive ego, what's your spiritual condition like? What's your mental condition like? And once it's all said and done and done and said, you know, because you can't be on top forever. You know, you can't be the most important actor forever. You can't do six movies a year forever.
Forever.
So what do you do when life is in front of you? Where are you at? You know, and that's important. I think that's key to remember no matter what stage in your career that you're in, because we all sacrifice so much in the early years. We missed birthdays. We missed holidays, we miss weddings, phone calls don't get returned, you know, grandparents get older, nieces and nephews become adults, you know, and you look back, you look back and you're like, I missed it all, you know, And it's hard. It's hard. These things are hard to navigate. These are just things that I observed over time and that I became conscious of, that I wanted to be mindful of shifting, because it's not easy to do that. And I just want to say that. And I have so much compassion for everybody in this business because we sacrifice so much.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking, the personal and life things that we have to give up. So for anybody on any level of their career, no matter where they are, if they're doing it, I'm so freaking proud of them. I am so freaking proud of them. I have so much respect for anybody who gets into this business. You're an actor. I love your work. Your work is good. It don't matter.
Yeah.
You're cooking, dog. It's hard. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. Oof. Yeah. Spirituality, man. Faith. Really has carried me.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With Kizik hands-free shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
This episode is brought to you by PwC. When unprecedented times are all the time, it's time to start walking the talk. Leaders like you turn to PwC to see and stay ahead. Upskill your workforce, use intelligent automation, and transform big ideas into breakthrough reinvention. Explore the human-led, tech-powered solutions that help you reinvent. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at pwc.com.
Years ago, I was doing a play. I was doing the Royale, actually, at the Lincoln Center. And Clark Peters was the OG in the cast. And that was my first leading role in New York. And, you know, again, that was one of the things. So funny, I couldn't even know how big the Lincoln Center was. I just wanted to act, man.
I just want to work.
That's all. So I'm sitting there, and not that this was on my mind, but I think it was a really good thing to plant, a really good seed to plant in the back of my mind. Clark sat next to me on the edge of the stage one day, and he said, "Chris, I just want you to remember something. There's no such thing as a star." I'm like, "Huh?" He said, "The star is the show. Remember that." And he's walked away. And he said, "There's no such thing as a star. The star is the show." So then, if that's the case, what's more important to me is every moving part of this story having the space to tell their part, no matter what role they have. I don't care if you're a lady sitting in a corner who stands up and screams, "I want my pencil back." We need that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you're a part of upholding the star. People, sure, we come to see you in film and on stage, quote unquote stars. But really, these people are just conduits to the star. These people uphold the stars a little stronger than some of us at times, right? Which we come to see the story. We come to see them tell the story.
Right.
Now, if that's the case, we can just sit down and have, you know, Audrey McDonald just eat cereal and talk to her husband and just enjoy it. You know what I'm saying? And then she'd be star. You know, but it's the story that's the star.
It's you know? I think it's such a powerful lesson. And I love the idea that like, that a group of people, like in the context of a really anything, a play or a movie or a band even, that they are a conduit to, I mean, star is actually, it's actually a good word for it, because it does feel like it is cosmic in the sense of like, there's something being channeled through this group of people together, right? It's not through one person together that then is going to be received by someone in the audience or have some sort of effect. And in that, they have some sort of emotional response and say, oh, I'm compelled or I'm attracted to this. This is hitting me in some way. And certainly I do think that that certain people are really skilled at being a conduit, right? Like when I go watch, I'm trying to think of like a good example, but you understand what I'm saying, that like it's that person, it's less about the person being a star and more about the thing that's coming through them. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah, absolutely.
I think music is a really good like way of thinking about this, because sure, like, you know, John Mayer is amazing, great, but it's the when I've had the most visceral experiences is when it's like, oh my God, that he's in the zone, right? Even athletes too. When you say like they're in the zone, they're channeling something bigger than themselves because they've done the work, they're prepared, et cetera, et cetera. We're witnessing something cosmic happening, coming through.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah, I do. That's what's so spectacular about it. You know, and that's why we come see these people over and over again.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I want
absolutely.
I want more of it, you know? I mean, I was so, I didn't know George Foreman's story at all. I had nothing. I blank slate. So I was really overwhelmed and obviously super compelled by just the whole narrative, and especially the sort of the distance from and then return to faith, I think is really, it's powerful. And the sort of the hunger and the aspiration that this man had for every aspect of his life. It was like 100% in, always, all the time. Commitment, you know? Did that do you feel that way? Like do you have that part of you that is like hungry and striving and wanting to grow?
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's constant with me. And it always has been, like I was mentioning earlier, you know, like after an audition, going back and playing the tape back, because I would have the feeling, you know, doing in-person auditions is nerve-wracking. You know, and then you got to leave there with all that anxiety that you built up over a couple of days, and then you go to the room and it's shocking and you know what you said. Hopefully you did the thing you thought that you were going to do. You know what I mean?
I know.
So like, I would go and play a tape back because I wanted to change. I wanted to grow. I wanted to get better. I really do. I really do still. I still want to get better. And I still feel like I'm learning so much. I feel like I've learned so much. I feel like I know so much, but I also feel like I don't know anything at all.
Right.
I feel like always, and I'm like, I'm always like, God, why do I always feel like a toddler in moments? Like, what is going on? Like, when am I going to get it? You know what I mean?
I don't know if we ever do. I don't know if we ever do.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you've worked with some amazing people. Do you sense, again, I'm sure it's the same. Like they just focus on the work. Right. It's like nobody really knows anything other than, I guess, who you are. You have to know sort of yourself.
You have to know yourself here.
And then
focus
on the work.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would say not a lot of people really focus on themselves. You know, that they focus on the work. You know, they get a lot out of it. People get a lot out of it, especially if you're able to be successful in many ways in your career. You know, it's real easy to get caught up into yourself. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. I want to also say that there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with having the ability to celebrate in the moment your achievement. There's nothing wrong with being able to understand in the moment exactly where you are.
Yeah.
And being able to celebrate that. That's also really great too. You know, but, you know, I think even with that, we all should be striving for what can make us better in our moments, in our lives, in the work that we do, you know. Or do I take this moment and ride with it, and then when it fizzles out, I'll try to figure it out. You know, who knows? Because life is long, and I only have my own lessons to learn. And I just pray that everybody in their journey, in their walk, has the privilege or has the courage. I'll say has the courage.
Ooh.
To step into those changes when they present themselves, you know, because we all get them. I tell people all the time, right? So I did grow up in the church, X, Y, and Z. And people think God has some booming voice. So they say, there is no God. I don't hear God's voice. They think it's some loud, rolling voice. Someone's going to come down and crack the sky.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen like that. God's voice is not exclusive to pastors. It's not exclusive to bishops, cardinals, priests, whoever. God's voice speaks to everyone every single day. And you know what it is? It's that little voice in the back of your head that says, grab the umbrella. And you're like, I don't need that. What? I don't need the umbrella. 20 minutes later.
It's raining.
Right? Washy. You're in the grocery store. It says, I'm like, I don't even drink orange juice. Why do I want orange juice? Whatever. And then you get home and your person says, oh, I've been craving orange juice all day. You're like, right?
Yeah,
right?
I know it.
Or it's that thing that whispers to you, it's time to leave a relationship.
Right.
A friendship. Or go speak to that person or send that email. Blah, 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 blah. Get on your computer. Blah, blah, blah. That's God's voice. That's the guidance that we all get. So I just pray that everybody has the courage to listen, to hear, and to trust it, and to step forward through it when it's speaking, because we all get these moments. We all have the opportunity to listen. And I'm not going to say I'm a pro at listening. I would be lying. I struggle every day. These ears get clogged up.
I know
what's going on up in here. So just that we all have the courage to do it.
It's courage. I think you're right. I feel like courage is totally the right word. Because I think it's easy. I don't know if easy is the right word either, but it's like, it's safe. It feels safe to stay in what we know,
uh-huh,
and to stay stagnant and to stay where we are and as who we are. I think it can be really scary to step into something that is unknown. Say, can I do this? Right? Like, can I achieve this? Like, this opportunity is being presented to me. Am I capable? Like, that it takes courage to, like, and obviously faith too, but really having courage to say, no, like, I'm gonna try. I'm gonna see how this goes.
It's gonna be scary either way.
Yeah, that's right.
Either you're gonna do it scared, or you're gonna have that fear later on, thinking about what would have been, should have been, could have been.
Mm-hmm.
You had that fear too. So might as well just go ahead and do it, you know? Do it scared.
Do it scared. I'm a big fan of do it scared.
You know what? And when you do it, guess what? You're still going to be scared.
That's right.
Say, Bobbles, just do it. You're going to be scared all the damn time anyway. Do it.
Might as well.
You know?
Yes.
I tell people, you just this just the same as you walk through the door with love. Encourage, you're walking through the door with fear. Fear is always there. Fear is always by your side.
Yes.
And that's not a bad thing. It's an intelligent response to some things, right? Because it helps you unpack and process certain things, right? It's a filter, but like, it's always there. So you're walking through the door with it in everything you do.
Everything.
You get into a relationship, you scared.
Oh,
start
my God.
A new job, you scared. Go home and see your parents. You scared.
Uh-huh.
Okay. All the time. You're scared. Think about it. You think about it, but you're doing it anyway. You're still going to go to your parents. You're still going to get in that relationship. You're still going to tell your person, hey, that hurt. You're still going to, you know, you're still going to have to, you know, listen
or
to
you
what
won't.
Your boss has to say.
Or you won't.
Or you won't.
Or you won't.
Or you won't. Goodness gracious, or you won't.
Or you won't, you know? And then and then what? And then, like, there's no growth. You know what I mean? Like, that, you know what? That's scarier to me.
That's scary.
You know what I mean? Terrifying. I actually think that's maybe scarier for me.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
There's a really good quote. I don't remember exactly how it goes from this book, Big Magic, that she basically writes this letter to fear. And she's like, fear, you can come on the road trip. You can sit in the car. You do not get to drive.
Yeah.
You do not get to pick what's on the radio. You are just a passenger. You are not going to be in charge of this in any way, shape, or form. You are more than welcome in this space. Yeah. And I will love on you, but you don't get to be in control.
You don't get to be in control. Yeah, I like that.
And that's what I was hearing you say. I was like, God, that's exactly what it is. That it's like, okay, can I accept that fear is here?
Uh-huh.
And just continue to move forward and not let it control, you know, everything that happens. I can just hear it, accept it, thank it for trying to protect me.
Right.
And then say, okay, well, I got to do it anyway.
I got to do it. Thank it. You know, thank you for whipping out your blades. You know, you're a swordsman.
That's right.
You put the knives away. It's okay.
Yep.
You know,
I always compare it to like Moana. I don't know if you're a Disney person, but Moana, you know, she's on the island and the family's like, we don't leave the island.
We don't leave the island. Yeah.
We don't go out to sea. You don't go out. We don't go there. We're safe. It's safe here. We just stay here. We mind our business. We stay here. It's all good. And she's like, yeah, but I want to go out there. I want to know what's out there. And they're like, no, don't go. And she's like, I got to go. And sure, the seas are rough. Like it's tough out there, but having the faith and the courage to go do that, I think is like, it's imperative, you know, and it ends up helping everybody in the end, of course.
Yeah, but somebody got to be the one to go past the reef. Somebody has to be the one. And once one person goes past the reef, we know that we all can go past the reef.
Mm-hmm.
But if nobody goes past the reef because of one person's fear of that one thing that happened, because really what happened? Dad's friend drowned.
That's right.
Her dad's friend drowned. Now nobody else can go out. Oh, because her dad has made him. Her dad's scared because he watched his homie die. Got a whole island stuck because of one person's fear.
It's not a great reason. I gotta be honest. It's not a great reason. You know what I mean?
I was like, wait a minute. I said, hold up. I said, so everybody just go to. Just not leave all because he had a bad moment.
But that's the real tea. That's the real tea right there.
Yeah. It's true.
So, you know, in this exciting moment, this is a really exciting moment for you. It's a big culmination of, I think, a lot of work and a lot of time and a lot of energy. Uh-huh. And I'm curious if there's anything that you're just like trying to remind yourself, or we've talked about a lot of those things, but is there anything specific that you're carrying forward that maybe was a lesson from like being George, from George, from this process that you feel like now you're sort of sitting with, at least today?
I think I'm still in that process because there's still so much happening around this moment and in this film.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'll be completely, and I'm still doing so much work for it. So I don't think I'll be completely free to step back and look at the scope of everything until this movie is opened.
Yeah, right.
And I have done my very last screening of it.
That's right.
And I'm like, finally done. And I'm like looking forward towards something else that I'll be able to really pinpoint what has stuck.
Yeah.
And what will go with me forever. I mean, what I can say to that though is I am forever changed as an actor. I'm forever changed as a person going through this experience. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life.
Yeah.
And having to do constant cognitive reframing on a daily basis with the amount of adversity that we faced during this, you know, really taught me a lot about my spiritual fortitude, my mental and emotional fortitude, how to create boundaries for those things, you know, and how to be of the business while still maintaining my artistic integrity, you know? So, you know, I will always carry that with me. And like, that really helped when I stepped into it. Like, it like helped when it was a strange way to go into doing theater again, because I, you know, I did Death in the Salesman after, like right after. So I had, and I totally forgot initially how much like love.
And you're not just alone in your trailer anymore. No, dude, it ain't just you. It ain't just you anymore.
I was like, it took me a minute to adjust because I got the job during the pandemic. I had been in the pandemic the whole time. I got the job during the pandemic. Then I started the job, right? During the pandemic. So then I finished the job. And now I'm coming into a space where we're rehearsing, you know, 8 hours a day in this. And it, so I'm having to be reminded of what it's like to be in the rehearsal room on an energy level, right? An energetic level. So I'm like,
what the hell, all these hugs, man? These hugs, man. I was telling you I was doing all right. What the hell? What you about? What you wrong?
Well, it took me a couple of weeks to tone it down. And I was like, okay.
You get back to your gushy theater self.
Yeah, I get back to the gushy self. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's so good though. I love the rehearsal room vibes are so, it's so, it's nice. It's nice to be working in that kind of space.
Yeah, it's cool.
When everybody's showing up with love and like is excited to be there and wants to do the work, you know? And it's not as isolating. I've heard that across the board. That like, I know that film and TV can be so isolating because you're in your trailer and then they say, okay, we're ready. And then you go and then you're in it. And then you're like, okay, thanks. And then you go back to your trailer and you're just like with yourself.
You know, actually, I prefer that because it keeps you focused on the work.
Ooh.
And it doesn't distract you because it's easy. So people say it's isolating. It's very easy to get distracted. Somebody's always trying to talk. Somebody's always fooling around. Messing around.
Oh, talking, in the rehearsal room, it's all foolishness. It's all foolishness.
But you have 4 to 8 weeks, 8 hours a day to work on a thing, right?
Right.
Whereas here, we're showing up today and everybody does their own separate work.
Yep.
So if I'm here and I gotta be in a certain and you over here and I'm chatterboxing with you, no, man. So in a sense, the fact that it's so isolating, I think is really helpful. With some jobs, right? For like if you were to be doing like a improv comedy film, it might help to be like talking to everybody and fooling around, just keep the energy going. But there are certain films where like the kind of energy you have to bring, you can't be pulled away from it. You kind of gotta hold it for to hold it a little bit longer.
That takes discipline too, you know.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm so excited for you, man. The movie's great, and yeah, it's just it's cool to see someone who I could tell that you put a lot of care and time and energy into every piece and part of it, you know, and I could feel your spiritual self in it. You know, you gave over to the thing, and let it move through you. And now it's cool to witness that, at least for me.
I appreciate that, bro.
Yeah, no, I really, and I was so excited. That's why I was so excited to talk to you. Cause I was like, I just feel like you've got some good experience under your belt. You've had some
oh yeah,
you've got some good shit that you've done that, and you've seen some shit, and
I know oh yeah.
And I was like you can't have done that, and especially this movie, you can't have had to go through the physical and the mental piece of this without spiritual fortitude,
you know? True.
Otherwise, I think you'd be like, I don't know, you'd be disheveled right now. I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't even know either. Yeah, definitely a lot of spiritual fortitude, a lot of spirituality, a lot of praying, a lot of meditating, you know, a lot on a daily basis, sometimes more than once on a daily basis.
Yeah.
You know, and that was important, you know. Yeah.
I'm psyched for you, man. I appreciate you taking the time. This has been so, so awesome. Yeah, dude. So great.
Yeah, man, it was great, brother.
Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Have you ever wondered how your favorite performer actually feels? Well, here's your chance. Welcome to The Quiet Part Out Loud with me, Bobby Steggert, Broadway actor, and now a therapist to a whole host of Broadway creatives. Part interview, part therapy, this is not your typical podcast. We'll go right to the heart of things with some of your favorite artists, what they still struggle with, what lessons they've learned, what they haven't figured out yet. There's enormous power in saying the quiet part out loud. Are you listening?
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.